The innovation funding gap that we have in the Northeast is, I think, is spread right across all stages of businesses. For me, it's about really looking at how our region investors support our regional-based businesses, but also how we bring investors from outside of the region here to access companies and support the companies here.
Hello and welcome to UMICAST, a podcast about business and entrepreneurship. This conversation is the first in a new five-part series we're producing in collaboration with the Innovation Super Network, and we're going to be talking about the key priorities, challenges and opportunities for innovative companies in the northeast of England. So the Innovation Super Network exists to connect businesses with the opportunities, finance and support they need to innovate and grow. And this special innovation series we're doing in partnership with them will explore issues such as bridging the innovation funding gap, innovation ecosystem development, and mission-led innovation. This episode marks the first in the series, and so I was delighted to be joined by Jordan Darg, who is the head of access to finance at the Innovation Super Network, and Sean Foy, who is a senior manager for the UK network team at the British Business Bank. You might remember Sean from episode 4, where he was talking about business loans and how the British Business Bank supported businesses during COVID-19. But the theme of this conversation is all about bridging the innovation funding gap, which really means a number of things. The gap in funding between the Northeast and other parts of the UK, the gap in funding for specifically early stage companies and startups, and the gap, unfortunately, between female founders and their male counterparts. We also explore the idea of the Northeast as being self-contained from an investment perspective, the future of public funding under the Shared Prosperity Fund, how the investment landscape changed with the emergence of regional angel investors, syndicates and networks, and of course the current economic challenges that hang over all of us at the moment and what that might mean for access to finance and innovation funding. So this is a conversation for anyone who wants to learn a little bit more about the funding opportunities for innovative businesses based in the Northeast and garner some top tips and advice as well on things like investment readiness from two experts in this area. I'll be certain back to this at the end of the show, but please do check out the Innovation Super Network's range of programs and initiatives by visiting supernetwork.org.uk. The team have supported 1,200 businesses since 2016 and leveraged 25 million of investment into local businesses, so they're doing some really important work. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoy this one with Jordan Darg and Sean Foy on bridging the innovation funding gap. Welcome to the podcast, both, and thanks so much for coming to do this in the studio. Sean, I know we've spoken previously, so welcome back.
Thank you, yeah.
And and Jordan, really looking forward to hearing from you as well. So, yeah, welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Perfect. So I want to just jump right into the subject of today's conversation, which is bridging the funding gap for innovation and access to finance in the Northeast, which I know is something that both of you guys know a lot about. And obviously, we're trying to align this podcast series to the Accelerating Investment and Innovation Summit, which poses this question, is levelling up enough to attract investment into Northeast businesses? So hopefully by the end of this conversation, we'll be a little bit closer to answering that. So Jordan, I don't know if you just want to start us off and just explain a little bit about what this innovation funding gap is that we're seeing in the Northeast.
Yeah, I think, you know, the innovation funding gap that we have in the Northeast is, I think, is spread right across all stages of businesses. I think that, you know, the Northeast typically and historically has been, have a deficit of funding. And I think it's been very difficult for innovative businesses to raise investment in the Northeast. But I think there's been so much work and progress made over the last sort of 5 years. We've seen new funds arrive in the Northeast. And we've seen, obviously, accelerator-based programs such as the Regional Angel Investment Accelerator. We've seen increased funding going to the VCs that are here in the North, and we've also seen an increase in angel investors as well and coming to fruition in the Northeast. But there is still a deficit when it comes to very early stage investment, supporting very early stage innovative led businesses. There's still a real deficit, and I also see that as our businesses grow and scale here in the Northeast, that there is the potential to have, you know, that real scaling type capital, you know, those multiple millions of pounds worth of investment here in the Northeast. And I know there's a lot of work being done on that to ensure that we can fully utilise and fully support all businesses at all stages, but there is still a gap, and there is obviously still a gap in comparison to our other regions across the UK, particularly between the southern regions and the northern regions as well. But the Northeast is quite isolated here, and so for me it's about really looking at how our region investors support our regional based businesses, but also how we bring investors from outside of the region here to access companies and support the companies here in the north as well.
So there is more funds becoming available and some kind of green shoots, if you like, but overall there is still this deficit with other parts of the UK. And obviously, I think just to follow on from that, you know, why is it important that these businesses do get the funding and the finance that they need?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the Northeast, we've got logistically really well placed. You know, we've got some great business leaders here in the north. We've got amazing universities. We've got amazing support mechanisms. You know, UMI, the Innovation Super Network, British Business Bank. You know, we've got the real platform to make businesses successful. If those funding gaps emerge and become larger, you know, we're not going to see new businesses establish themselves here in the north. You're not going to see businesses grow, and effectively that has a massive effect on the economy. There'll be a lack of job creation, there'll be a lack of Northeast businesses pioneering their way through sectors and industries, and I just think it will have a huge effect on the ecosystem as a whole if we aren't supplying the right types of finance to the right types of businesses at the right time as well.
So that there's the kind of like a macro impact of not getting this finance to the businesses, and it's perhaps taking that long-term view that if you invest in them now, then it'll pay dividends. Sean, is that your kind of perspective as well, looking at it at a regional level?
Yeah, I would perfectly agree. I think when you look at a lot of these innovative businesses, they will, with the right funding, they'll scale, they'll grow quickly. That will mean significant employment for the area, and that will have a significant impact, bringing cash into the area, but also from a social perspective as well.
Yeah.
And certainly when I first joined the bank nearly 4 years ago now, a lot of those businesses, when they were seeking funding, were driven to London to seek investment. Sometimes it forced them to relocate to London, so you then lost that business to the ecosystem, because the only way the investor would invest is because they were London-based, was if that business was on their doorstep. Because I'm not going to travel for 3 hours to the Northeast to come and do a review meeting with this business I've invested in, because actually that's all my time gone. You need to be within my ecosystem, not your own ecosystem.
Yeah.
Things are getting better. You know, the great work that Innovation Super Network has done, and Jordan and the team there, the Angel Hub and the Fund Her North group, because when I joined, there was pretty much no angel groups operating here. Individual investors, but quite difficult to get to them.
Yeah, they weren't kind of coordinated.
They weren't coordinated, and those people still exist. But again, you know, how do you get to these people? You've got to know somebody who knows somebody, type of thing. That's very difficult if you're a young entrepreneur starting out. How do you reach these people? How do you get in front of them? They are very busy individuals, they're time poor. So you do need syndicates and groups of early stage investors who are open to and advertise the fact that they exist. But we need more of them.
Yeah.
And that's a challenge. And will Levelling Up bring that? I hope it does. But time will tell.
I think that looking at how the investment landscape has changed, what would you say have been kind of some of the best examples of changes that have happened? Obviously, Sean, you mentioned, you know, that previously there wasn't that kind of coordination of angel investors. Obviously, that's one. Any other ones? I don't know who wants to come in on that.
Yeah, I think following on from what Sean said, I think the things that have happened really well that I think has really ignited some of those really positive outcomes has been around education and accessibility. You know, historically, an angel investor was always deemed to have to be somebody who has scaled a business, exited a business, and would have multi-billion pounds worth of surplus capital sat in the bank account to invest in these companies. That is actually a myth. That is not actually the case. And it's about us bringing those people who maybe have a small amount of surplus cash, making them understand what angel investing is about and actually the wider impact it has on their personal and regional economy, and actually educating them on, you know, supporting earlier stage businesses. And what you'll find is these people who are coming forward, a lot of the angel investors that have come into the Newcastle Angel Hub hadn't historically invested before, but we put on some great education-based programs, which has led them to start investing. Obviously, we've now developed the Women Angels of the North Syndicate through Fund Her North. That's all been built on education. And what that's done is developed capacity, which has started to allow them to understand and know where their money's going, how it works, and how angel investing works. And ironically, through the introduction of these people to invest in the companies, the businesses are actually utilising amazing skills and expertise as well.
As well as the funding.
So it's perfect for these innovative businesses, these early stage innovative businesses, because they're not just getting the capital, they're getting the professional expertise, they're getting doors open for them. And again, like what Sean was saying, word of mouth, it's who you know. People start to talk. And I think that for me has been super successful over the course of the last couple of years. And that's really started to drive forward that early stage angel capacity. But more still needs to be done. Okay. We're growing it, we're developing it, but more does need to be done. And it's about how we work together, how we build an ecosystem together to enable that to happen. And I guess for angel investors, they get real confidence out of co-investors investing alongside them. So that's funds, that's public sector funds. That is also the Regional Angel Investment Accelerator Program, which is a grant program initiated by Innovate UK. All of these initiatives has helped driving more people to want to start investing. And I think going back to your point as well, Richard, levelling up in the region is absolutely key to that, for that to continue and for that to develop even further.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of like the funding sources for these innovative businesses, talk a lot about angel investment. Is that one of the main sources of funding for these types of businesses, or is it the grant funding and things like that as well?
I think it's really a mix of funding. So it's the things that Jordan has referenced, but it's also grant funding, but the grant picture is mixed. So it often depends on which local authority area you're in, which combined authority area you're in, not just in the Northeast, but across the whole of the UK. You also have great institutions like Innovate UK. They will have a mix of grant funding, some loan capital as well, and possibly some equity funding that may be available. But again, it's the signposting and understanding what your options are as a business owner, as an entrepreneur. Who do you go to? Who do you speak to? And when you're pursuing grants, for example, it's a highly competitive environment. You'll be one of a number of businesses. There's only a certain amount of cash. Once that money's gone, it's gone. More often than not, it'll not just be a grant and you can go and pick it up. You've got to probably deliver certain objectives. You'll only have a percentage number that you'll be given, 50% or something like that. But you might have to spend the money before you can claim it back, this type of thing. So it's a mixed picture. There are funding opportunities, but it's the signposting that businesses need to understand and reference.
Yeah, and in terms of the debt side of things as well, because these companies are at that kind of proof of concept stage, you know, loans are probably going to be more difficult, right? So is that where the angel investors really come into their own, because they didn't put their money in based on the vision, right? Whereas the bank wants to see the balance sheet and things like that, typically.
Yeah, and see how they service the debt as well. A great example, I had a meeting with a company based in Durham yesterday, really early stage innovative business, doing some fantastic work. And they have had a number of conversations with some of the funds and the VCs here in the region. Obviously, the two early stage for those, we're talking about angel investors, but they'd already been speaking to some debt providers. And it was very much, yes, we'll give you the money, but you need to put a personal guarantee on that debt. And it's difficult because it's, you know, that's their personal house, you know, they've got family. So it's very difficult, some obviously for businesses at that stage to be able to take debt on in the business, which is why, you know, the grants at that stage is really, really important. And, you know, the likes of the North of Tyne Combined Authority, they're doing fantastic things around obviously the grant initiatives. You've got Creative UK, who's entered the region as well, who's really looking at how they support creative-led businesses and industries through their grants as well that they're offering. So it's starting to happen. It's starting to turn. It's starting to emerge. But I think some of the other cities and towns within the Northeast here, I'd like to see more grants available to within some of the other areas of the region as well.
Yeah, so I guess based on the businesses that you sort of speak to, we don't kind of have the business perspective, I think, here today, but obviously both of you guys are speaking to these founders and these visionary people all the time, right? So I guess what would you kind of say was their perspective on this, if you like, on the funding gap and things like that?
I think they find it very difficult to navigate the way through the system. The access to finance program that we do at the Innovation Super Network in partnership with the British Business Bank, one of the modules of that program is to showcase what is available here in the Northeast, what types of funding and where they can go to get that funding.
Signposting pieces.
And it is, absolutely. And I think that's the biggest thing that they struggle with. Who do I go to? Who do I speak to? These people are obviously running businesses, so time is very precious to them. So that module that we deliver is really, really important to those businesses, because hopefully if we can give them the right advice and the right support just to get them in front of people, you tend to find that that can be a really good stepping stone for them, getting them in front of that with all those right people. And obviously we support them making those introductions as well.
Yeah, and Sean, your sort of perspective on that?
I would agree with everything that Jordan said. It is that signposting that's critical. The programs that the Innovation Super Network run, that investment readiness program, preparing that young entrepreneur, you know, those entrepreneurs to pitch, to build up their confidence and their knowledge, to get them in front of the right individuals. Because quite often, once they get that first investment from an angel, investor, whatever they put to call themselves, that will lead to other opportunities. It will, those angels may know another angel somewhere else that is prepared to support them. It does open the contact book. It does open their ability to build their management teams, because quite often there'll be a sole entrepreneur, you know, sole person. They might be very good at what they're doing, but they don't necessarily have the management skills or the finance skills. And they don't have the money to pay a corporate finance team to go and find the funding for them. That's the other problem they've got. You know, they're often bootstrapping. They're working on wearing a lot of hats, working on a shoestring, putting in money themselves. They may also be trying to run a, you know, hold down a job and pay their bills like everyone else has to pay their mortgage, their rent, everything else. So it's quite a challenging environment that they're in. The more help and support there can be. So I'd always encourage an entrepreneur to be like a sponge, to soak up the information. And even if somebody doesn't want to invest in their business, they might help them with contacts and knowledge. Yeah. And that is also as equally as important as the cash that they get.
Yeah, that's a critical point, isn't it? Yeah. And I think, you know, you touched on it with the investment readiness program, which you guys both run in partnership. Is that right? So that partnership work and piece, that collaborative piece, you know, it, I guess in your experience of being involved in this kind of funding, access to finance space, how important is that? Maybe Jordan first on that point.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely important, to be fair. I think collaboration is absolutely key. The Innovation Super Network have a huge amount of partnerships and service providers and expertise and advisors who we bring into play to help us give the best advice and support to companies who are needing it at the right time. Particularly, obviously, with the Newcastle Angel Hub, we partner with North Invest, and North Invest are extremely, extremely obviously knowledgeable and experienced in delivering angel networks. You know, they've obviously got the angel network in Leeds and also South Yorkshire. So again, those partnerships are absolutely key to how we develop the ecosystem to give the companies that access to a wider network. You know, yes, we're talking about the Northeast here, but actually you get a lot of investors who are maybe based down in Yorkshire or in Liverpool who are keen to look at opportunities and businesses here in the Northeast. So working with our partners and working collaboratively is absolutely key. I don't think any funder or any provider, advice provider around access to finance or investor should work in silo. It's all about co-investment, it's all about collaboration, and it's about that ecosystem and how we come together to service the right companies.
Yeah, I think that's something the Northeast is pretty good at as well. In terms of obviously, you know, we live here, so we would say that, right? But you know, and Sean, I know that the British Business Banks describe the region as being kind of self-contained, and I think that really gets to the heart of that point that there is that really, you know, it might not be the biggest ecosystem or the best financed, but it probably in terms of the closeness, would you say it's.
Yeah, I think it's the in terms of self-contained, what we mean by that is that the company and the investor are within the same region. So they're not going out of region to seek investment. I think we were in third place in terms of the UK. I think London was the top, and then I think you had it was probably the Northwest, and then the Northeast. 66% of investee companies, investors are within region, within the Northeast of England. That's driven a lot by, I think, the great work of stuff that Invisible Network, North Invest, Fund Her North do, but also things like the Northern Powerhouse Investment Fund and the Northeast Fund, where you've got funds and fund managers on the ground, boots on the ground, who are available and engaging with businesses, so they're not having to travel 300 miles to London. What it does is, though, is it's now started to open up and see other investors look at the region, as Jordan was referencing there with the angels, saying, actually, the Northeast is a bit of a hotbed here. Actually, we would like to try and get in on that. How do we get through the door? You're starting to see some VCs who aren't members of our programs opening offices in the region or strengthening their presence that they already had in the region. So a satellite office becomes a permanent office, this type of thing, because there's opportunities there, because the Northeast is a remote region geographically. The ecosystem is relatively small and everybody knows everyone else. But they will work with people when they are in region. So if you come into the region and you show interest and you have people on the ground, then you'll get the opportunities as an investor. That's the important thing.
Yeah, and I suppose from an investor's perspective, you know, if you want to tap into the opportunities in a new market, well, if that market's really kind of coherent and you can, you know, you can speak to a cluster or a group or something like that, you've broadened your opportunity in that way. So
yeah, I think that's one thing as well. The Northeast is, you know, we're quite successful at is we've got some great clusters here in the region in terms of sectors and industries, and I think that for me is what's driving out these real novel innovative businesses. Now, as Sean mentioned, to sustain those businesses and keep them here in the Northeast, you know, operating in the Northeast, developing in the Northeast, we've got to have that capital. And, you know, the more investors that you speak to, funds, VCs, private angels, high net worth, the more you speak to outside of the region, you know, and you're in London and your Golden Triangle areas, they want to have access to these opportunities here in the Northeast because they see what can come out of here. They know the universities. They, you know, obviously there's the Northern Accelerator Program, which is obviously in development at the moment. And I think that, again, is going to bring real value to the type of businesses that we have coming out of the region and hopefully staying in the region.
Yeah, hopefully. So I wanted to come on to the kind of public funding landscape sort of at large, and obviously post-ERDF funding and things like that. And obviously, we've now got the Shared Prosperity Funding coming in to kind of replace that. And Sean, I know you've got some sort of thoughts on that. Maybe you could talk about whether that's going to deliver the same level of funding that Northeast businesses need.
So Shared Prosperity, we obviously don't, the bank's not driving that programme. It's obviously driven by central government. All the local authorities and the combined authorities are having to apply or have applied for their funding pots for the next 3 years, and it, you know, it's quite wide ranging in what they can and can't do. It really is replacing the ERDF funding, as you referenced. It is about supporting business, what that means in reality, I'm not clear on that at the moment, but also things like business training, supporting the local community and the environment. So it's quite a broad range of subjects. What I can see is obviously through Levelling Up, the bank's been allocated a little over 1.6 billion of funds to support existing regional funds programmes, so the Northern Powers Investment Fund, the successor to that from the end of 23, Northern Powerhouse Investment Fund 2, NPIF 2, if you like, that's the sort of generic phrase we use at the moment, will operate across the whole of the Powerhouse region, but also in the North East, so it will succeed the North East Fund, 660 million debt and equity fund, and in other regions you'll see new funds in the successor fund in the Midlands, expanded fund in the South West, and new funds in the devolved nations of Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. So everywhere the government feels there needs to be a levelling up, there will be a fund.
Right.
So that secures, particularly in the case of the North East, an anchor funder with fund managers on the ground for the next 5 years, really, from sort of 2020, start of 2024, right the way through to sort of 2029.
Okay.
And that means that you're not going to be in a position where suddenly there's no funder in space. Certainly a number of years ago that happened in the Northeast. One fund finished, not ours, but that fund finished, and there was no one for sort of 18 months in that space, and that made life very difficult for businesses to source early stage equity funding and indeed later stage debt funding as well.
Yeah, so I guess in terms of the sort of runway for funding at that sort of high level, there is cash available, right?
Yeah.
Which is good news. And I guess maybe the challenge will be making sure that that's kind of equitably distributed across the different local authorities and combined authorities, because I know you mentioned that certain areas are better funded than others in a way, and there's obviously, I assume, like a formula that works that out. But do you think that's going to be a key challenge with shared prosperity, this making sure that the funding is where it needs to be?
I've been to one of a few presentations on shared prosperity that the local authorities have done, and I think the challenge that they've got is, I don't think the money is as much as you saw, say, under European programmes. That's probably the first thing to say. It's a three-year programme, and they've got to do quite a lot with it. So it's things like, you know, beautifying a town centre. What does that mean in English if the town is quite tired looking? Mm. It's things like you can spend it on capital projects, but if you've only got a pot of 5 million as a local authority, that's not going to stretch very far. So they've got to try and be quite innovative in what they're doing and how they support. I know all of them are really keen to support businesses, whether that be providing training or upskilling, working with existing stakeholders like Innovation Super Network and groups like that in the region to try and help on investment readiness, programmes like that. But they've got to be quite innovative in what they're doing. And they've got 3 years in which to deliver those programmes, and no doubt they'll be required to provide outputs off the back of that.
Okay.
So you'll probably hear more about shared prosperity, I think, as we go forward this year and into next year, as the local authorities really understand how much they've got and what they can do with it and what they can't do with it.
What they can and can't do with it, of course. And I guess in terms of looking at the region as a whole, do you think that if you had to look at one area for improvement or where you'd like to see more funding, would it be kind of public sector or would it be private sector?
I think my personal opinion would be more private sector, but that's the area that I operate within. Yeah. I think there has to be a level, though, to be fair, Richard, because what I find is if a company is successful in receiving public funding, they've got a better chance of getting private funding and vice versa. For me, it's about co-investment. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we can do to enable co-investment into businesses, the better chance that business has of succeeding. And I think that's why the ecosystem is so, so important, that we've got the likes of your VC and your funds and your public sector funding. Then you've got your private investors and your private high net worth individuals and corporate venture-based funding. That type of stuff has to come together because they all have a place and a role to play in how this ecosystem develops and how we support the businesses as well.
Yeah, it's not either or, it's both.
For me, yes.
Yeah, I would second that. You can't just solely rely on the public sector to deliver everything. I think it can be a bread on the water. It can be an anchor, if you like, that brings, you know, you've certainly seen that with Powerhouse Investment Fund and the Northeast Fund, bringing in fund managers into the region that previously didn't operate here. What those fund managers then bring, they bring expertise, knowledge, beyond our current, you know, the ecosystem that that existed before. But quite often they will bring other funds programs they operate that are private sector programs. And so that business then has an opportunity to access those programs at some point. I know a lot of the fund managers in the region have their own angel groups and networks that they can bring to the party as well. So it does open the region up. Public sector helps, but it can only go part way down the road. It does have to be that collaboration piece with private investors coming into that space as well, taking up the slack sometimes. Mm. You know, we don't mention the word austerity much now. It doesn't get mentioned, but it's still there. It hasn't gone away. And certainly most government agencies will talk about how tight things are going to be. I was at a Bank of England presentation last week and they were talking about the word recession was mentioned and more than once while I was in the room during the presentation. So I think the next couple of years for the UK economy and the world economy is going to be tough. And that probably means, you know, there may not be as much funding available from the public sector. I don't know. I'm speculating slightly. I have to be careful. So anything the private sector can do in that space, I think, is also really, really important.
I think there's been a couple of great examples where public sector funding has really empowered private sector funding for businesses. And I guess, you know, the first one is the British Business Bank's Regional Angel Programme and the Innovate UK Regional Angel Investment Accelerator. Both programmes, which is public sector grant-based funding, which has to be matched by and levelled up by private investment into the company. For me, they are great programmes, because what that does is really support the organisation with the capital that they need. By getting grant funding into that business, it can propel how quickly a project or a programme is developed, so it can get to market quicker. But also what it does as well is it gives angel investors and private investors confidence to back that opportunity, because it's gone through such a robust due diligence process with Innovate UK and obviously the British Business Bank and the British Business Bank providers. And they've gone through such a robust due diligence based process that indeed it's a great opportunity for investors to back. And I think for me, particularly working on the Regional Angel Investment Accelerator myself, that for me has really propelled the amount of private investment that we've seen occur in the Northeast over the course of the last 3 years. So, you know, going back to your question, Richard, for me, it has to be hand in hand, because one won't work without the other.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot more of those kind of matched funding. I mean, the Future Fund was a kind of landmark example of that. And Sean, you kind of addressed the elephant in the room before, which is something that I wanted to come on to around kind of current economic challenges with inflation and the cost of living and the various, I mean, the pandemic may sort of come back, might be able to get through the full conversation without talking about that, but I don't think so. And just the extent to which these kind of headwinds that are being muted by pretty much every organisation are going to have an impact on innovation funding, and do you think that impact could be significant?
I think it's a challenge for businesses. What we pick up is a lot of businesses are worried about the future, so there's a nervousness. If you're trying to grow your business, some people will go back and review their plans, and they may temper them a little bit, because they're concerned about rising costs, they're concerned about supplier issues. You know, the other elephant in the room is employment issues. You know, there's an argument that we're almost at full employment, but what that means is you don't have, or you can't recruit the staff to expand and develop your business, and that's an ongoing issue. Some Bank of England stats, I think there's 1.2 million vacancies in the UK. There's about 1 million people looking for employment, so there's a gap there. But there's also the people looking for employment don't have the skills to do the jobs that are available. And I don't know of any firm that isn't carrying vacancies. So if you're a young entrepreneur or an entrepreneur of any sort, frankly, who has aspirations to grow your business, human capital, which is a phrase isn't used much now, but human capital is equally important as financial capital. And if you can't find the right people, or you're losing people because people are being poached, make no bones about it, by rivals, you won't achieve your growth plans. That's the reality of the situation. So we are in a very odd economy. I've spoken to a few business owners where they're interviewing people and they've got multiple job offers on the table. And unless you reach their aspirations in terms of salary and benefits, and the big thing now we were talking before, Richard, is, you know, people working from home. If you,
that flexibility,
if that flexibility isn't there, they won't come and work for you. You know, you've also got competition from other parts of the country because the technology has advanced to such an extent now. You could live in the Northeast and work for a business in London and never go into the office or only go down there once a month and stuff. That is happening, where people are sort of taking jobs with firms in London and you know, not, you know, the days when everyone trooped into the office and were there from 8:30, 9 o'clock until 5 and then Monday to Friday are sort of gone now, and the pandemic's killed that and changed the way we work and behave. And I don't personally think we're going to go back to that. No. So there's some real challenges there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that talent issue has been a problem for the Northeast for prior to this current, like, bizarre labour market, right, where you've got near full employment, as you say, Sean, but like a recession around the corner, which the two things aren't supposed to align. So I think for innovative businesses as well, the skills challenge is kind of more acute again. So do you think that's probably going to be top of the list of priorities for them, to get the right talent in to, you know, invent and innovate these new products and services?
Yeah, I think, Richard, to be honest, you know, for me, a good business may have a B grade product and an A grade team. That, for me, is the ideal scenario rather than the vice versa, basically. So I do think that skills is a huge need for a lot of businesses. But when we look at how the pandemic has affected that, I actually think that there is a huge opportunity as well. Because as Sean said, if you can work remotely and you can be recruiting Northeast people for London-based businesses, why not do the same? You know, and obviously overseas-based skills as well. You know, we've got a lot of, sector and industry-based skills in Europe. And again, we should be, you know, taking advantage of being able to bring them into the Northeast. And I think, again, it all comes back to that levelling up agenda, doesn't it, really, in terms of, you know, the skills and the capacity, bringing more diverse skills and you know, dare I say, more women into organisations as well, and getting more women with expertise sitting around board tables. I think for me, I'm quite a positive person, so when I always see a negative, I try to turn it into a positive, and I find that a lot of the businesses that I've worked with, they're looking at it in the same way as well. They are looking at it in the same way to see, you know, how can we make the most of this pandemic and you know, how can we bring more skills into our business. And there's a couple of organisations who we've been able to successfully support with funding, who've actually been able to recruit advisors and board members and senior executives into their team from London particularly, and that's really helped them get the finance that they needed because they're experts in their field.
Yeah, obviously when the pandemic first kicked off, it was going to be, the writing was on the wall for small businesses, and there was more new business registrations in 2020 than in any other year on record, right? So I think it is always worth sort of looking at the challenging context that we faced. But then I guess these entrepreneurs, right, they believe in what they're doing. So yeah, Jordan, again, in your experience, you know, when you are talking to these people, of course they're mentioning the issues around talent, around cost, around things like that, but I think if you believe in what you're doing, I imagine they're kind of unflinching a little bit in their outlook.
Definitely. And I think, you know, the entrepreneurs who we were working with through the pandemic, it was amazing to see them pivot their business so quickly and change how they worked, to obviously, you know, bringing everybody back into their own homes and getting everything set up from an IT perspective, looking at actually where they can utilize some of their product or ideas that they're looking to innovate, how that can support the pandemic. You know, for me, I really saw a lot of businesses turn on the head and actually go from strength to strength, and they're now, you know, really, really excelling in their industry and sector. You know, Funter North, for example, probably wouldn't have actually been initiated if it wasn't for the pandemic. It's about taking the opportunity at the right time to make something happen. And I actually think as a region and as an economy and as an industry and sector, we are able to make things happen much more quicker. We're actually able to have easier conversations. We're actually able to do more business. And I think, you know, that probably may not have been the result had the pandemic not happened. So, you know, a lot of negative came out of the pandemic and some, you know, some awful times for a lot of people. But, you know, I think we've got to focus on the positives and how we drive that forward.
Yeah, and it did, of course, spur innovation, right? Which is absolutely, which is the whole game. So
yeah.
I think we've covered off pretty well that kind of funding gap in terms of the innovation funding gap. But you mentioned getting more diversity into innovative businesses. And Sean, I know we've spoken about this in the past and in terms of the challenges that female-led startups face in terms of going for funding and things like that. So, yeah, maybe just talk to me a little bit about that challenge and how you and the guys at the bank understand it.
I think one of the challenges that we sort of identified from various small business finance reports and a diversity report that we did back going back to sort of 2020 with Piers Linney, who was an non-executive director of the bank and an angel investor, and he used to be on Dragon's Den, for example, was that a lot of female-led businesses, female entrepreneurs, didn't go forward for investment, didn't seek particularly angel investment or later VC investment, because sometimes they didn't think they'd be taken seriously. They were often dealing with, and I'll say it here because I'm one of these people, I'm a white male in their 40s or their 50s, so I'm a white male in my 50s. I feel 100 today, I haven't said that. but I could have a bit of a sore throat and I'm dying, of course. So they just don't go for investments. So what do they do? They self-fund, they look for a grant, they look for anything else rather than pitching forward. Interestingly enough, though, I saw some stats recently that if it is a female-led business or you've got a mixed board, they're far more likely to be successful. Where you have that diversity rather than it being sort of a male-dominated
Well, it's that groupthink type thing, isn't it?
It is that groupthink, that collaboration, that engagement, listening to different ideas. It is starting to break down. You are starting to see investors now not look at whether somebody is male or female. It's more about the business owner, the idea, the management team generally, and trying to sort of see that dynamic break down, but it's taking time.
But
it's also female entrepreneurs having that confidence to step forward as well. So things like, again, I'm referencing innovation, but the investment readiness programs help that. It gives them the confidence to develop their skills and their knowledge to be able to pitch for investment. And not to lack the confidence to step forward.
Yeah, and the Super Network has like a kind of female-led sort of angel investment syndicate. Is that right, or something to that effect?
So the Innovation Super Network support Funter North. I'm one of the founders of Funter North, and I've launched through Funter North the Women Angels of the North Syndicate, which is bringing together women who have, some have invested before, some haven't invested before, and educating them onto angel investing. We've been established now for a year. We've done 9 deals, and it's great to see that half of those deals are actually in Northeast-based businesses, which is amazing. I would say probably 40% of the women who's in that network are here and live in the Northeast, and they're from the Northeast and have their businesses in the Northeast. But it's all a collaboration again. You know, I do wear multiple hats, but basically bringing Innovation Super Network, Funter North, the Women Angel Syndicate all together makes these things happen. And it's really important that, you know, we're supporting diversity on the business side, on the SME side, but it's also equally important that we support diversity on the investment side, because the statistics are there. Females, women angel investors want to back female-led businesses. And as Sean said, you know, by having more women involved around, you know, the senior exec table and the board table, it does actually make a business more successful. because you bring in a different level of experience and empathy and so on. But it's about how we help those entrepreneurs and those investors get rid of that imposter syndrome. And that's why, you know, as Sean mentioned, through the Access to Finance program and through the work that we're doing at Fund Her North and in the Women Angels Syndicate, it's really important that we educate, we hold the hands of the entrepreneurs, we hold the hands of the investors, and really sort of change the way that people think. And we sat around our Fund Her North board table a couple of months ago and said, you know, women are starting to ask for finance now, but they're not asking for enough because they still feel as if they don't ask for the amount that they're looking for. So we're doing a big piece and looking at the data and looking at how we encourage more women to go for the amounts that they actually need, rather than thinking they don't ask for what they actually want, so to speak. But it's about breaking down those barriers and making sure that, you know, they've got the support. And again, it comes back to collaboration, because we need, you know, Fund Her North is an entity that's been built up of MVC and funds across the North. And again, it's looking at how they can be involved in Fund Her North to give them access, the female entrepreneurs, the access to the capital that they need at the right time.
Yeah, and it comes back to that non-financial support as well, right, yes. Isn't it? And do you think in terms of, you know, inspiring more women to get involved in business generally, it is having those mentors, those kind of senior leadership figures who are women and who kind of shine a light, if you like, to others on the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we often see as well, as through the Women Angels Syndicate specifically, that the women who are part of the syndicate have, you know, a specific set of skills and experience and professions and they're key to advising some of the companies that come through the syndicate. So fortunately, we've been able to back most of the companies that have come through the syndicate, but the couple that we haven't backed, it turned out that they actually needed some expertise before they take on the finance, and we were able to obviously introduce the right person to them through the syndicate. It's a balance, it's really important, and it goes back to what Sean was talking about, the skills as well, the skill set of what's important in an organisation.
Perfect. And I think it brings us quite nicely on to advice more generally that you would give to an early stage founder that's looking for funding, that signposting exercise. But I guess if you could put yourself in their shoes, and obviously not knowing what support's available and you know the various other sort of things that they might go through, you know, where would you start with a kind of good bit of advice for them to take that leap and go out and get the funding that they're after?
I think it was you, Richard, who mentioned the word, but I think they've got to believe in themselves. They've got to believe in themselves, first of all, and believe in their opportunity. And if they can sit there and say, you know, I have come up with a solution that is solving a market problem or the problem that we're seeing in the industry, then I need to take that opportunity and have confidence and belief in myself to be able to develop a business plan. And I think it's about speaking to as many people. I think Sean mentioned this earlier, speaking to the right people, speaking to people together and looking at how you develop that. And as I say, there's numerous programs through the Innovation Super Network and through other areas who can really help businesses get to that stage. I think we're an open and honest business. So, you know, if somebody comes towards us and they've got an idea, we will press them to tell us why they think that idea is great. And because we've got to give them an honest answer as well.
Yeah, and Sean, just to add to that in terms of really key nuggets of wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it's around absorbing any information. If you can join if you can work with your peers, so you're joining an investment readiness program, you're working with groups that you know, Innovation Network and Fund Her North and groups like that, listen to the advice, listen to the help, almost make yourself a bit of a nuisance, really. Be a pleasant nuisance, if you like, in terms of gathering information, absorbing it. You know, when children are like sponges, they absorb information. I remember a famous quote from the Jesuits, and they said, you know, give me a child to the age of 7, you can have them for the rest of their life, because they absorb so much information. As a business owner, absorb that information, take it and use it for your benefit. There are so many people out there who will help you. Ask them. and ask them again. And if they're not, I keep asking until they say yes, and gather that information and use it to your benefit. You're sort of in a race as an entrepreneur, as far as I can see, against everyone else. And if you want to secure that investment, grow and expand and develop your business, you have to stand out. So the more groundwork you do, the more spadework, early doors, building your contact networks, building up information, developing your team, getting yourself, you know, pitch perfect, as it were, and investment ready, that's equally as important. So so be a sponge, basically.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, one of the kind of bit of advice that I wanted to come onto and wonder what you guys think is kind of how technology and these digital tools have maybe made it easier for founders. Obviously, you can do all of this crowdfunding and things like that now as well, which is another angle that we probably haven't touched on. So any sort of thoughts on, and for the talent side of things as well, where you can now obviously have this remote working and attract people from all over the world. Is that something that you would encourage these sort of founders to look at? What kind of digital and technology is available to help them?
Yeah, I think, you know, tech is a huge enabler for any person in any type of business. But I think, you know, when it comes down to, I think there's still a lot to be said about this personal touch and the personal, obviously, interaction, particularly with investors, with clients and so on. But I do think, you know, the right technology will enable a business and help them to grow and help things to be a lot more efficient within a business as well. And that's why, you know, we love supporting tech companies, because the more innovative solutions that come about to support entrepreneurs, the better for me. But yeah, I think it's a huge enabler, but there's a lot to be said about that personal human interaction as well.
As well. Sean, would you sort of agree with that?
Yes, and I think what you find is, you know, certainly, I know Jordan would bear this out, the angel groups that she works with, a lot of the angels aren't located in the region, but they can join something virtually, they can join a pitch event, they can join a program and engage with a business that probably wouldn't have seen. Would they always necessarily travel to the northeast for a couple of hours to see a bit? Perhaps not. So technology has helped that, but it is often the personal touch. Ultimately, you're going to have to go and see that investor in person.
Yeah,
they are wanting to go into see the whites of your eyes. I mean, I was a lending manager for years, right? You can give me all the spreadsheets you like and all the business plans you like. The financial stuff's important. It's half your decision, if you like, when I was a lender, but also meeting the management team and weighing them up. CVs are one thing. I get a lot more from being in the room and seeing people. When I used to go and visit businesses, I used to do two things. I used to scan the car park to see how expensive the cars were in the car park. I used to go and look to see who else had been to see them, because who was my competition. And the other big thing, that, and it's a joke, but it's true, do they have a fish tank in the office? Because if they do, that probably means they're wasting their money. But you do need to engage in person. The personal touch still counts for a huge amount.
Yeah. Particularly around finance and funding, I think.
Crowdfunding, it's a good way to go. But what you need to understand about crowdfunding is it's going to take you away from your business, in the sense that you're going to have to engage with a whole series of small investors who are putting money into your business, and you have to have an ongoing relationship with them over a period of time. A lot of the platforms will help you create a prospectus and so on and so forth, and help you deal with the sort of marketing and management. And if the crowdfunding round is successful, that can lead to other crowdfunding rounds. It can lead to angel investment, VC investment. But if it goes badly and you don't make the number you were trying to achieve, that then can reflect really badly on you in the future.
Well, it's very
future.
Public as well at that
It's a very
point,
public
right?
thing. You've really put yourself out there. You're trying to run your business, but actually you've also got this other fundraising hat that you've got constantly on. And those business, you know, you put money out there, you've sold a percentage of your business, that then can impact on future investment from angel groups. How are those investors going to get that return on that money at some point? So it's right in certain circumstances for certain businesses, but it isn't sort of a universal panacea.
Right. Yeah. Okay. No, a really important point, I think. So before we kind of wrap up, I was just wanting to maybe touch on what you think some of the best investment opportunities in the Northeast are, and kind of put us in the shop window a little bit, if you like. Obviously, we've got a strength in technology and life sciences and these kinds of spaces. But yeah, Jordan, I mean, in terms of the businesses you work with or the sector strengths that you see and the clusters that you're involved with, you know, if you were going to try and encourage an investor to come and do business in the Northeast, what would you kind of highlight as the key things to look at?
Yeah, I think, well, one of the programs that I'm working on at the moment is the Finance for Sustainable Growth project, which is with the City of London, with the Northern Accelerator, North Star Ventures. And I think, you know, we're really looking at the sort of the sustainable sector, green energy, that type, those sectors really here, and clean energy, particularly here in the Northeast. So I'd say that for me is an industry that I think is really developing. Companies also that we've supported here in the Northeast have had, you know, come from med tech and health tech as well. So again, going back to life sciences and health tech and med tech, I'm starting to see an increase in digital and creative industries as well. So we've been working on a project with Creative UK around accessing finance for creative led businesses. So again, I can really see that propelling. I think we're quite sector agnostic here really in the Northeast, but I think they're the three areas for me that I'm starting to see a lot of activity happening. And I also think that really is attuned to what our angel investors want to see as well.
Okay. And Sean, would you sort of agree with those kind of sector areas and as the big opportunities?
Yes, yeah, definitely the life sciences sector. That's a critical sector. You see the great work of the universities, Newcastle University, the Accelerator Programme. You know, Teesside University's joined that accelerator program now. So you've got the five universities in the northeastern Tees Valley in that program. There may be plans to expand that further, which is positive. The tech sector people highlight, but particularly fintech. So people forget, you know, the likes of Sage, the Newcastle Building Society, they are anchors in the region. A lot of the people that they train go on to start their own businesses in that fintech space. So there's a real sort of fintech community that's evolved up in the region. That's important, that's critical. Another big sector is gaming, so that's computer. I'm very old, but computer game, I can still remember Astro Wars, for goodness sakes. that was the state of the art technology 20 years ago. But gaming is a big industry now. You know, you see the emergence of esports, setting up an academy in Sunderland, tying in with Creative UK and the work that they've done. And actually wanting to develop the gamers, and I heard a speech from one of their senior executives at eSports saying, well, we'll create this academy, this college, if you like, this campus in Sunderland. Not only will we be training people to develop games, games designers, that will draw in gaming businesses who either want to start in the region, so from outside, or who decide to relocate because all the talent is on their doorstep, because we're going to be producing the future gaming talent. So that's another, and you know, I think they thought, I've got a lot of competition to get that esports academy in Sunderland, esports campus. So I think that's another critical area that we should look at. What we shouldn't do is try and copy what other regions have, because, you know, don't say, well, we're going to do that, we're just going to be a tech sector. Well, actually, what does that mean in English?
It's
so wide, it's too wide. Focus on the niches that we're good at, so fintech, gaming, life sciences. You know, people forget now, but the Centre for Life is still a major research facility right in the heart of Newcastle.
And the RVI is like one of the top hospitals in the UK.
If you think the heart lung transplant program that doesn't get mentioned much now, the children's program, it's the major centre in Northern England. So people forget about that. So I think those sectors are the critical things. But don't forget the more traditional sectors as well. I've recently taken on Tees Valley for the bank to look after that area as well. And I was with an enterprise agency yesterday, and they were highlighting a business that's a manufacturing business. Had grown to a million turnover. The management team were aging, so mum and dad wanted to exit the business, and they groomed daughter to succeed them, to be the new MD. She's gone on to grow that business to a 3 million turnover business and to double the employees from 40 to 80 plus.
Yeah.
So never dismiss the more traditional industries as well, of manufacturing, light engineering.
Where the North East typically had an enormous strength.
We're still an industry-led region.
Sometimes they get forgotten about. Yeah. And there are still some great businesses on this business park here where we are today in Seaham, as well as in other parts of the North East that don't always get referenced. But actually, trebling your turnover in a space of a couple of years and doubling the number of your staff, isn't that a great advert for supporting the local community that business is based in?
Absolutely.
Think about the job creation as well in some of those traditional industries as well. We've got a lot, if you think about going back to the unemployment rates, if you look at that, those demographics as well, you'll probably see that, there's people who are probably out of work because of the pandemic who are traditionally from some of those manufacturing, advanced manufacturing type businesses and industry-led businesses. And again, if we can support those companies to grow, then we create more jobs.
Perfect.
I just thought I'd probably mention in passing as well, you have obviously electric vehicle technology, Nissan plant, but then, major centre for electric vehicle technology with British Volt, which will be up in Northumberland there, southeast Northumberland. And then obviously the emergence of there's a battery plant obviously in Sutherland, and Nissan are building another battery plant. So that green technology, we're at the forefront of it. If the government is, if we believe what the government has said, then we're all going to be driving, electric cars within the next 10 years, probably even the next 5 years. So we're right at the heart of that. And a lot of business can feed into that Nissan supply chain as well within that. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we've sort of done a little bit of the crystal ball there to round off, haven't we? So with all those opportunities that you've mentioned, a kind of parting word, Jordan, you first, about kind of how you feel about the future of innovation in the Northeast.
Yeah, I'm really excited by it, to be honest. I think, there's a lot to be done still, but I think, we all like a challenge. And I think as a region, we're really, really well placed. As I said earlier in one of my answers, I mentioned about was being logistically well placed. I mentioned obviously about how, the universities that we have here in the Northeast are excellent at what they do and what they deliver. I think, I'm delighted that I'm part of our, access to finance sort of stakeholder team as part of, the North as a whole, and obviously, want to continue to work hard to try and continue to drive that messaging around us needing, more capital and deploying that capital here in the region. And I think if we can, level up in the right way, then I think we'll certainly, have got a great future ahead of us here in the Northeast, and it'll be great to obviously, start and see more skills coming to the Northeast and being able to service and support those businesses as well. But, I love the Northeast, and that's why I live here, and I think we've got, a great opportunity.
Perfect. And Sean, on the future?
I think it's positive. There are certainly bumps along the road in the next couple of years as the economy takes a little bit of a dive, to be frank, and the world economy does anyway, and a lot of uncertainty. But you shouldn't forget the great work that has been done already in the region. The key sectors we've highlighted already of, fintech and life sciences and so on and so forth. I would agree that there needs to be continued funding into those areas and support those businesses through Levelling Up or whatever programmes come forward. But there's positive hope for the future. But you have to accept the bumps on the road in the next couple of years. But you have to take a longer term view rather than the shorter view of sort of woe is me in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think the point is that the region's kind of innovation landscape's built on pretty strong foundations.
Yes. It is.
Yes. It is, absolutely. And if we look back to the bumps in the road that we had, obviously through the pandemic, a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of businesses really sort of focused in different areas and took the opportunities where they were given. And I think we've just got to keep going, yeah. Keep working towards what success can look like.
Perfect.
Yes, fully agree. Yeah, fully agree.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much, guys. That's been a really insightful session, and tons to sort of draw out of that as well, I think, and an optimistic tone to end on as well, which is always nice. So thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks for your time.
Well, there you go. Bridging the innovation funding gap with Sean Foy and Jordan Darg there. Lots of things to digest, so let's just jump straight in with what I think was the most important insight that came through from that conversation, and that is opportunity in every sense of the word. The opportunity investors have to come and back Northeast startups and SMEs, the opportunity the founders and innovative business owners themselves have to access public and private funds to help them develop and grow, and the opportunity that will be missed if we don't close some of these funding gaps that we're seeing in the region. For Jordan and Sean, clearly the way to do that is by working together, bringing partners, policymakers, businesses and investors together to work through some of these disparities in funding and come up with solutions. And a perfect example of that is the Innovation Super Network's Accelerating Investment and Innovation Summit, which is taking place on Tuesday the 13th of September, and which you can register to attend for free by visiting supernetwork.org.uk/investment-summit. The summit will be grappling with some of the issues discussed today, so if you enjoy this conversation, do be sure to book your place. Also, be sure to check out the Newcastle Angel Hub, which Jordan spoke about earlier, and which brings together equity investors with ambitious startups, and also Fund Her North, which is a northern-based volunteer collective of over 30 women with a combined investment power of over 650 million. I'll put a link in the description for both those pages. So before I let you go, I just want to zero in on those key pieces of advice from Jordan and Sean to any business owner who might be looking for funding and listening to this. For Jordan, she said it's all about self-belief and having that confidence to develop a business plan around what you believe is a genuine solution to a market problem or opportunity. There'll be lots of people who might doubt you on the journey, so that self-belief is super important. And for Sean, the key message is to be a sponge and absorb any and all information that you can. There are tons of organisations out there who exist to help you. So soak up everything you can and use what you learn to drive your business forward. So a huge thanks to Jordan and Sean for coming in to record this one. And as always, thanks for listening.